In today's episode, Omar and I discuss various moves made in the draft and also free agency. You know, definitely a lot transpired, but, you know, we dive in, so check it out. So obviously we've had a lot transpire over the past week or so. Obviously we had the draft come first. We saw the projected top three of LaMelo Ball, Wiseman, and Edwards, whatever order it was going to be. We found out it was Edwards, Wiseman, and then Ball. Obviously, there were some head scratchers, some questions in terms of what moves some teams had made. What did you see in terms of the lottery?
I mean, you know, like I said, I think we go out into this draft. There's so many unknown and variables that kind of went into, you know, who was who. And then we talked about where each fit would go. And it kind of all made sense, the first three picks. Anthony Edwards made sense alongside D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns, a big two, can kind of fit in with them. But if we're going off of, you know, the two guys that I thought landed really well, was Haliburton, I think, to the Kings was a really impressive move for the Kings, even though there's a lot of other things I don't like that they did. But I do think that's a good fit. Kind of a ball moving guy that can play along De'Aaron Fox. I'm very surprised that a team like Chicago didn't try to get him. Just, I kind of like what he does for them. He's not really a backup point guard per se. I think he's more of a two, masquerading as a one, and we'll see how Walton uses him. You know, I talked about him a lot in our pre-draft show. But, you know, in terms of winners, you know, I really think it just came down to – actually, we've talked about it. I kind of like what Detroit was doing with the draft picks. The other signings were a little bit head-scratching, but I did like the draft that it had. I did like that they picked up Killian on that team because, you know, Detroit looks like they're a team that's not really going to be contending for a playoff spot, and I think he needs to be in that kind of system to be successful.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think him being on a team that doesn't really have too high of expectations, obviously if he had fallen to the Knicks, you know how people tend to think, oh, the Knicks are either a championship team or they're going to get the hottest free agent on the streets. But I think Detroit definitely did well with that. The Patrick Williams pick for me was something that, I mean, even watching the show, a lot of people had him skyrocketing up the board. Fourth was kind of, I had heard that it was a possibility. I didn't think Chicago would do it just because, to your point, I thought they needed a lot of guard play outside of LaVine. You know, Coby White was good for them before the shutdown, so maybe they're looking at him, but he's more of a scoring threat. I don't know if he's going to maybe run the offense with Chris Dunn, obviously, being gone. But I think if you're looking at that 3-4 position, it's kind of a lock jam there just because they have Carter, Markkanen, who are pretty much 4 or 5s, depending on what lineups they're on. And they also, if I'm not mistaken, they still got Otto Porter there. So, you know, to me, I just think you got to have a guy who's plug in and play ready in terms of that. Maybe Pat Williams is a OG Anunoby, which people are trying to, you know, kind of slate him to be in terms of his skill set, but we'll see.
Yeah, for sure. That draft was a little bit of a head scratcher too, but also, you know, we'll see what kind of stuff Billy Donovan has because he hasn't had this kind of team at all. There's always been some kind of talent in place, some type of ball dominant guard that he's had since his time in the NBA, whether it's with Rusty or whether it's with CP. So I like to see what kind of stuff he's done because this is the first rebuild project he's kind of put together. So it was a little bit of a head scratcher, but it's kind of like, you know, the NBA, we talk about this all the time. If you can hit on a wing, especially, you know, a 3-and-D kind of guy or a defensive or just a really athletic wing, you know, that provides you with a lot of versatility. And allows you to slide Markkanen down to the 5 and Wendell Carter. And so I see where the fit was there. And so you see where they're going. But, yeah, I definitely think they should have went with a pure point guard because they don't seem to have one.
Yeah, that's true. And speaking of picks that I liked in that top 14, I know a lot of people talked about Jalen Smith, like the kid from Maryland. A lot of people were like, why are they taking him? But I'm looking at his percentages, obviously watching the film. He's a stretch big who can defend, averaged about 2.4 blocks per game, 37% from three, 75 from the line, which is a plus for a big man. So I think he complements what CP needs and what Ayton needs in terms of floor spacer, whether he starts right away. We're going to get into that in terms of free agency with some of the moves that they made. But I do think that this is a good acquisition for in terms of what they need for now and even going to the future, whether this does pan out and you maybe get Ayton and this guy leading your front court going forward.
Yeah, we'll see how that guy, you know, works out. You know, big athletic dudes. You gotta give it a shot, man. It's the NBA. You got CP. You got some rim running, some vertical spacing, as I like to call it. This kind of guy can really camp out in that dunker spot and wreak havoc. Is the highest percentage shot in the game. Nothing better than a dunk.
Yeah, it's true. But obviously, moving on with the draft, who was maybe your team or your teams that you felt outside of the lottery that made some good moves? And even just the draft as a whole, were you questioning some moves in terms of what teams did? You know, it's kind of a two-parter there, but
if we're going off with teams outside of the draft, I really like what the Heat did with their draft pick, because I really feel like who they got, and I'm blanking on
his Achua? Name.
Yeah, I really think he's the kind of guy that fits what they do and their culture. Just because of, you know, if anybody can turn a player into a pro, it's the Miami Heat with their accountability and stuff like that. As soon as I saw him fall to him and I saw the tape, I'm like, of course they took him. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it just makes the perfect sense that they would take him. A guy you can either back up or play alongside Bam. Especially with Leonard there for a short amount of time, he can be a project. But you know what? The Heat always seem to put things together. You know, they always seem to find something. And if they don't, then they're able to move it like Justice Winslow, right? And get them something later when they were able to get Iggy. So I like that move.
Yeah, it was definitely a great pick. Think even watching the finals, I know he's not a 7-footer. He's a 6'9 guy with a 7'1 wingspan. But especially once they went to the bench, once obviously Anthony Davis is a tough three, top five player, depending on what day of the week it is. You saw the drop off when it came to their big man, when Bam was kind of hobbled or not on the floor. And I think that gives them that dynamic where they don't lose too much of a inside presence with a vertical spacer. And I think he has the ability to switch on to a lot of guys that, you know, that's the part of Bam's game that people love, you know, including myself. I've been big on his game. But speaking of picks, I thought Philadelphia had a pretty good draft night. I thought they made the right moves. Even their pick with Tyrese Maxey going there, you know, didn't really shoot the ball that well in terms of, looking at a shot chart, was a little erratic, but was an okay corner three guy from the left side in college. But I think looking at his form, there's some minor tweaks he can make, nothing too drastic, as long as they don't kind of Markelle Fultz it and maybe do a little too much. But I think he can be a dynamic guard, something that they actually need, because, you know, you talked about the Landry Shamet trade that they made when they acquired Tobias Harris. I thought they lost that, you know, a guard who can do a little bit more. I think Shamet, you're going to see a little bit more of his game once he goes to Brooklyn, obviously playing with KD and Kyrie. But I think Maxey gives them that dynamic where they have a guard who can attack. And also, once he starts getting the reps, I think he can be a knockdown shooter from three.
Yeah, and even just outside of the draft, I know we're going to talk about free agency. This kind of, like you said, kind of bleeds into it. I think Philly's kind of setting up their roster. This feels like they're trying to figure out Ben and Joel, that's why I was always puzzling the move Elton made to let Jimmy walk and to sign Tobias and to let JJ walk and to let Bellinelli go and to let Sarge go. And it's like, they got rid of all the floor spacing and then they put it with two guys that either play in the post or don't really shoot in the case of Ben. Now the trades they made for Danny Green and all everything else that they're bringing in, they're you can tell they're like, all right, well, let's going to give this a shot where let's provide these guys with as much maximum room as possible, right? And getting rid of Al Horford was one of them as well. But in terms of the actual, just pivoting back to the draft, the only other guy I can think of, even though technically it was a lottery, was your boy Toppin. Even though I don't know of the pairing of him and Mitchell Robinson together, because like we said in our pre-draft breakdown, that Toppin offensively is just, he looks so impressive. So clearly there's got to be defensive holes in that guy's game. So we're talking about winners. I think he'll be fine because he's going to get shots in New York because they're not going to have a ton of guys to play with. But we'll see what the fit is with an RJ Barrett combination of how well they can actually play together. Let's see how they fit in the Big Apple, man.
Yeah, I think they got a lot of questions that need to be answered. It's been
the Knicks. That's all they are. It's all questions.
Yeah, that's all they are. But obviously, speaking of the Knicks and speaking of free agency, you know, that's been a big topic. But what were your takes on like that? What would you say you've?
It kind of works together. I think if we're talking about like losers of the draft, I think one of the biggest losers in the draft's got to be the Warriors, right? Because they had to draft Wiseman with the pick, which made sense. I'm not saying their draft was bad, but, you know, we all know what happened. They lost Klay Thompson.
Yeah.
And I think any chance of them competing for a championship this year and next year, I think, are done. Because of how long it usually takes to come back from Achilles. I think Klay was so important to a lot of their split ball, split screen action that, you know, how effective those guys could be, and the way he was able to cover Steph on defense, the way he was able to just pass the ball, the way he wouldn't need a lot of time to get his shot off. The guy took 11 dribbles when he scored 60 points. Fits in anywhere. Big wing. You don't have Iguodala anymore. And now you're going to have to rely on Kelly Oubre, who's never really been that kind of player. And Andrew Wiggins, we don't know if it's a change of scenery he needs or it's just a ceiling. Because at the end of the day, you know, as much as athletic as Wiggy is and everything like that, he's 6 years into the league. At a point, most guys are who they are. So I think they have a chance to be competitive for an eighth seed now. But, you know, that's not the Warriors' ceiling. We had them kind of competing for that third, fourth spot, potentially getting the right matchup and maybe making it to the conference finals. But now I really feel like they took the biggest hit of any team that I can think of.
Yeah, and I think even looking at their draft with Mannion, you know, they kind of addressed that guard play. And you even brought this up when we spoke off air in terms of the kind of turmoil that happened with the trainer, whether the Warriors would bring her back.
They lowballed her, right?
Yeah, they lowballed her. And
you're light years ahead of everybody, right? You got these venture I'm gonna go my rant now. You got these venture capitalist dudes who, you know, try to go in and invest, and their whole thing is maximizing profits. I got flames for Boston too, but while I'm at it. And sometimes they value assets over people. And, you know, ever since then there's been Boogie, there's been KD, there's been Steph, and yeah, you know, and now Klay, where it just continues to, you know, wear and tear on these guys, where it's like, okay, what's going on here? Where like they can't seem to make it through a season. And it just shows you how hard those finals to get there. As easy as it looked in 2017 and in 2016, 2017, and then the following year, the back-to-back titles, it is hard to play until June. It is very hard to play into June. And the body does not hold up. And if you're not investing in the bodies of the players that you have with your treatments and your facilities and the people, more importantly, like, things like this can happen to you. I'm not saying it's the reason why they're hurt. I'm not a medical professional, but I don't think it's wise.
No, it's true. And even to your point with the way this season's been, you know, everybody's kind of saying, oh, the time off's going to benefit people. But, you know, there's also the side of, this time off is going to throw a lot of guys off. You know, you haven't played in 9-10 months by the time the balls roll out. And yeah, you could get out. Yeah, you could get some practice and you get some runs in, but you know, it's still not game speed. And I think that's a big part of, obviously, you know, for the Warriors, to your point, they're in a situation where the season's ended in March. You're going to start at the end of December, and now you lose a 6 to 8 month window, at least with Clay. And then even going beyond that, to your point, you got to acclimate him to ease his way in, coming off of two catastrophic injuries that, you know, I don't want to say it, but, you know, a lot of guys haven't been the same outside of Dominique. And, you know, that's before my time. You know, in my time, I haven't really seen people recover 1,000% or even 90% of what they are.
And that's not what the injury is. Like, Dominique didn't have an ACL tear before that, right? Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Dominique just had the Achilles. Achilles is bad enough. Like, Kobe was never quite the same, right? He was still good, but it was in flashes. His body would start. It was the beginning of the end for him in terms of his peak. You know, he had that great run. And speaking of Warriors, ironically, it tore his Achilles against them. But just to show you, like, what it takes. But I think they were the biggest losers of the offseason, even with the other teams, even with some of the uncertainty we're going to talk about. But I think they took the hardest hit because they had the most to lose with Clay, because, you know, expectations just dramatically change, right?
Yeah. The core in their 30s, you know, Draymond just reaching 30. You got Clay and Steph there as well. So to your point, there's only a couple more years left, you know.
Just talks X and O's. One of the things they could do, you know, with Draymond's shooting that took a dramatic decline, even with KD, that was the one thing that kind of worried me. Because even with KD, his jumper started to wasn't really hitting. Now, part of it was he wasn't taking as many, but he was used as a screener. And part of the reason you could do that is because you could have Clay as a kind of a buffer to come off his hip. He can do the dribble handoff stuff. I said earlier, the split action, the pin down stuff that him and Steph, what I still at that point I think was the most dangerous play in the NBA, like, because it was just like you were terrified, because it's,
yeah,
like
post entry and split, yeah,
but that split action they would do in the corner, because you're like, yo, who am I guarding? Because sometimes it would go, and then Steph would go a little, like, go to the highs, would go to like more the wing three, and then you're like, you get scared, you get into a scramble switch, and then all of a sudden Steph has a wide open shot, or Clay is wide open in the corner. Or you mess around and there's a slip and there's a dunk because you're over helping. That play was always the most terrifying play in basketball for like a good 4 or 5 years. And that's not there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And unless Wiggins or Oubre become a much better 3-point shooter, or Draymond finally finds the stroke that he had from 2015 to 2016, they're not going to be able to compete for a championship. And then you have to start asking questions to this team. Like, where's the next move? And do we want Draymond Green 30 plus? But at the same time, do we owe it to Steph to be like, hey, we got to try.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of questions, man. And that's a really, I honestly really feel bad for them, because I wanted to see. And the good news about this year is maybe we get to see, you know, Steph be a one-man band. We've never really got to see that because he got hurt. So hopefully we get that. Maybe we get revenge Steph, which would be amazing to watch.
Oh, yeah, especially, you know, we saw at times in that unanimous MVP season where he pretty much lit the social media scene on fire with some of the shots he was hitting, you know, obviously the OKC game clincher. But even to your point, I just want to see where they kind of go with Wiseman as well. You've seen some tape of him being a playmaker in his workouts, or even in some of the stuff that, you know, you've seen through Memphis that you can maybe incorporate. But, you know, it's a small sample size. To your point, it's definitely a lot of uncertainty there. But moving to the other side of things, who do you think made the best of this offseason? Obviously, you know, there's a lot of talk about who won the offseason, but I think we know who, in our opinions, pretty much has won this offseason.
I think there's three teams that fit that category to me. I think it's the Lakers, the Hawks, and the Blazers. I think from the Blazers' perspective, I think getting Covington and getting more dynamic on the wing is what they were desperately looking for. Re-signing Rodney Hood. I don't love the Cantor move, just because I don't love I think he's just a hole. I hate his defense. Like, I feel like there's too many ways to attack him, and even drop coverages can't hide him. Like, he's just so exploitable that I just don't like his game on defense. I understand the offense that he's giving you, and I understand even moving on from Whiteside. So I get the move, and you got Collins coming back. So I love the moves they made to improve their roster. And I think Covington gives them a little bit of flexibility. He can hit the three-point shot. He's not a great three-point shooter. He's a solid three-point shooter. But defensively, he's versatile. He blocks shots for somebody his size. So he allows you to place a little bit small, and could be more of a release valve for when teams try to trap Dame and CJ like the Lakers were able to do. So I like their moves. How did you feel about Portland, man?
You know, obviously I got to show my boy Melo some love, obviously they re-signed him. But I think to your point, maybe it was just the Whiteside thing where, yeah, you look at his stats and you're saying, you know, we can get 15 and 15 from this guy. But you to your point, we've talked about this numerous times, just the lack of awareness on defense, just selling out on blocks. Maybe they're looking at it as, okay, we can get a guy for cheaper. Because I'm not sure what the Sacramento deal is. I haven't heard the figures. I haven't seen any figures yet. I know it's a one-year deal, but maybe he was asking for too much when they're like, okay, we can get Cantor for $5 million. Don't have to play him as much.
Exactly. I was just about to say, you don't have to play him as much. Like, Cantor knows what he is, at least. That's the one thing I know about that I can say about Cantor. Cantor knows there'll be times he won't play at all. And you won't have to worry about him pouting or anything like that. Like, he's the kind of guy, as annoying as he can be, he's a team first guy, right? So like everywhere he goes, teammates love him and stuff like that. Whiteside, we talk about this all the time, man. He's like I don't like killing players, but he reminds me of an empty calorie all-star, like a Reggie Theus back in the Bulls, where just like, yeah, the stats look good. Shout, you know, that's old school.
Yeah.
Even before, but the kind of guy that the stats look good, but what's really happening? And he looked really lost. I thought he was the worst big in the playoffs, and that's saying a lot. That's what some of the bigs that we saw. I thought of the teams that actually were supposed to be winning. I hated the way Whiteside played. So I do love the upgrades Portland made. I think the media is kind of overrating them because they're pushing them to third and fourth. And like, all right, let's calm down. But I do like the moves they made. They're way better than the 8th seed than they were last year, for sure.
Yeah, fully healthy. I think they're there. And Derek Jones Jr., another guy. We'll see what he can offer. I think he, in Miami at times, made some crucial mistakes on defense. Maybe he'll actually learn from that experience and actually give them something. Because to your point, the loss of Harkless and Aminu, yeah, they didn't really give you a lot on offense, especially in Aminu's case. But I would say that, to me, the dynamic aspect, we've talked about this. They just need that ability. They just need to have that ability to put a guy at the four spot. Yeah, like Melo, much as, you know, that's my guy, I'm not going to say you go and guard LeBron for a whole series, go and guard KD for a game or whatever it is.
I don't even think you put Jones in. I think Jones is what you're saying, more of a four than he is. I think you get Covington for that reason.
No, of course. But I think even then, you're better off at least having a Jones there.
So you're way
have Melo spot up.
Yeah, you're way more dynamic and way faster, which we talked about. They didn't have anything. It was really Nurk. And then once teams were able to kind of cut off that, once the Lakers were just like, all right, we're just going to sell out on Trapp and Dame. They kind of just wore them out, and teams were doing this. You know, shout out to the Raptors were one of the first teams when he had that hot streak. That's the first thing they did. Just like, all right, we'll just trap you all game because we don't trust anybody else to make plays. That's how they ended up having to get your boy, boy Melo. But the other team that I wanted to talk about is the Hawks. How'd you feel about those moves, man?
I like the moves they made in terms of bringing in Rondo and Chris Dunn. I think you at least have a good insurance policy, you know, knock on wood, in terms of what happens with Trae Young. It's a long season, and you have that mentorship with Rondo, and maybe you'd call him out. That's somebody to hold him accountable. We've seen the clips with LeBron and Rondo kind of going back and forth, talking to each other, Rondo just blatantly calling him out. and, you know, called out his body language. And you've talked about Trae Young's defense, which has been, you know, horrid. You know, we can talk about him being a top offensive player in the league. If you looked at the graphs on defense, he's on the other end of the spectrum. So that's how drastically bad it's been for this team. But I think they're a team that I thought them going after maybe a Hayward instead of a Gallo. I think the Gallo move to me was a little, I didn't really like it too much. But outside of that, I think they did address their bench, because I like the Collins pairing with Trae Young. It depends. I want to see what they can get from him in terms of maybe spacing the floor, how much you can maybe play him and Capella together. That's another aspect. But I think Atlanta, if they're healthy, you know, they're a team, and no PED suspensions, because, you know, Collins missed 25 games last year. So hopefully that's flush not a long-term issue.
Flush him out of his system by now, I hope.
Yeah, exactly. So
March, man, you better be cycling down, man.
Yeah. And even to your point, you know, with the Lakers, I thought, you know, shout out to Rich Paul working his magic. The Montrez acquisition, that was really, and I kind of talked about it, you know, kind of put it into the world. You know, I was actually speaking to somebody at work about this like a couple months ago. I was like, man, I feel like Trez is going to be a Laker. And they're kind of like, how do you think that dynamic works? I think like maybe something in my mind was like, oh, the Rich Paul factor. But I just thought with the way the Clippers were looking, some of the, yeah, they had dogs, as everybody was trying to say. But it just didn't feel like, and I was saying this all year, it just didn't feel at times that it fit. Yeah, they would beat the Lakers, but then they lose to, you know, a Detroit, or they lose to Phoenix, who hadn't been proven up until that point. So that's where I was like, I don't know how that's going to fit. And I like the Gasol acquisition in terms of you can play him as a passer. I think it gives them more dynamic, aspect of their offense. I want to see what Vogel does with that. Adds another passer on the floor, especially as a big at the elbow, can involve him in a lot of screens. And Wes Matthews coming in as another shooter who can defend and is a lot cheaper than what Danny Green was. So, and Dennis Schroeder, that's a big, obviously, one. We kind of talked about that. That's a big one, sure.
Like, I looked at their fit and I looked at it this way. I think last year's team, we talked about this all the time, is what was their identity when LeBron went to the bench? And it wasn't much of one. Even in the playoffs, it was like literally, you know, when LeBron went, they would fall apart, right? And the key was with any team with LeBron is if you're playing LeBron, you want to make sure that when he sits on the bench, you're taking advantage of those minutes, right? And your bench is winning or creating the game. Because when he comes back in, you're in trouble. That's the reason why when we used to argue about Raptors and Cavs back then with our boys, they'd be like, all right, bench, our bench, our bench. I'm like, okay, but in the playoffs, he ain't sitting. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, and when he sits, it's not for long. So you better win them 3 minutes, because when he comes back in, it's hell to pay. Mm-hmm. And I think the Lakers are kind of showing their hand a bit when they're saying, this team is, to me, is more built to survive the regular season than last year's team was, because now they got a unit on a bench that they didn't have last year. Because Trez can't block shots, right? He's not a shot blocker. The Clippers never had any rim protection. That was the one thing we even said all year, even when I was hyping them up more than you were. The one thing I said is that what they did is they said, we're going to stop you from getting to the rim. And we always said, but if you can get to the rim is a problem. The problem is they stopped you from getting there. Dallas and then eventually in Denver kind of exposed that you know, they could, and Doc kind of refusing to do that. I don't want to make this a Clippers combo. I want to make it more about Trez. Mm-hmm. I think in the Lakers system, his deficiencies in not being able to be a rim protector, you can hide with Anthony Davis. No. You can play him with Anthony Davis, because guess what? If he can't protect him, you know damn sure AD can. Right?
Even a Marc Gasol, too.
Marc Gasol is more of a width guy. He's going to be a guy that you have to play drop coverage with Mark. Mm-hmm. But again, if you're pairing him with AD or you're pairing him with LeBron, it's the holes are being covered more because those guys are bigger, stronger, and faster and more athletic. And it amplifies what they do. So Trez becomes a rim runner. Trez becomes a guy you can throw it to the block to. Trez is the kind of guy, and Gasol, both of them, the, you know, Vogel would run a lot of horns action. We give the ball. For those that don't know what horns is, it's like if you look at the basket, it's where the line of the key.
At the elbow where it extends. Extends right to the 3-point line area.
And they would run plays where they give it to Dwight, and Dwight would just do this dribble handoff stuff with KCP. And teams wouldn't really bite off of it. They kind of just use it to move the ball to one side or the other. But now with Mark, you got a guy who can step out and shoot the three. Mark can pass better than any. There's a lot of bigs in this game who can't pass as good as Mark Gasol can. Trez, if he decides to keep that because you're riding too hard off the thing, he's going to turn, he's going to bang it on your head, and you could throw it in the post to him. Schroeder's the kind of guy where he, you know, unlike Rondo, he's a little bit bigger. He's a little bit faster than Rondo is at this point in his career. Not as smart, but he's going to play alongside a LeBron, alongside an AD. He's never played with a big as good as AD. He's never played with a as good as LeBron, right? And I think the Lakers set themselves up to maybe they won't be as defensively. They won't have the same level as rim protection. But unlike the Clippers, the Clippers were stuck. It was Zubac or Trez. Now with the Lakers, like, all right, Gasol ain't working. We'll go to the 7-foot unicorn and Anthony Davis. We're good. And I think I love their moves for those strategic reasons alone, because I've had a time to kind of think it apart and stuff like that. I think they're going to be the, you know, defending champs, definitely ready to defend their title. And the only other thing I'll add is that I kind of want to see what their defensive rotations were, because as bad as Danny was on defense, you know, we watched in those playoffs, there was times that Danny and KCP and LeBron and AD were just, and Caruso would just fly everywhere and they would make multiple stops. I want to see what this unit's able to do. But offensively, it's definitely an upgrade.
Oh, yeah. That's true. And even looking at their cap space, they do have some room in terms of what they can add with maybe some vet minimums.
And they brought back Keith. I forgot. They brought back
Keith. Brought back Markieff Morris. And I think this team, to me, is definitely more potent offensively than they were the year before. They're kind of they're upper half of the league, but they weren't as elite as I thought they could have been, especially with the two-headed monster that they have. But to your point, this is year two with AD and LeBron, so it's going to be even scarier once they figure out, okay, yeah, you saw it in year one. Obviously, it resulted in the championship, but we can definitely say, you know, it could get even better. That's the scary part.
And they built their defense around what AD does last year, and they built their offense around what LeBron does. This year, it feels like their offense is built a little bit more around what AD does. Because I think they've realized that LeBron will be good no matter who we play him with. As long as guys can shoot. And, you know, Wes Matthews, you know, he's a cheaper version of what Danny Green is. He's giving you the same production that Danny Green gave you last year. You know, which he was better than Danny Green last year. But if he gives you the same production at five times less the price, you know, either way it works out. I love the moves they're made. And to the back to what you're saying about the Hawks, the only thing I'll, you know, we'll talk about this with like Charlotte and those other in Atlanta's defense, like, I don't know if I want to play Gallinari that much, but do I want to pay Hayward 30 million? I think Hayward definitely would have been the better fit. It's just, are you going to pay him 4 years, 120 to do it? It's a steep price, right? And not to, I don't love the contract, but I understand it because you're Charlotte, and who the heck's coming to Charlotte? Like, you know, the Zach Lopod mentioned it. They haven't won a series since 2002 as an organization. And to put it in perspective, that was Michael Jordan Wizards was the last time they won a series. That's how long it's been.
You know, Barry and Mashburn and Eddie Jones. Yeah.
Eddie Jones, like, you know, B. Diddy, my favorite guard from that era. But, like, you know, I'm bald now. You know, just how much time has flew by. So Charlotte is, you got to overpay. And sometimes when you're in those small markets, you're kind of screwed over in some ways, even though the counter is like, you didn't give Kemba that, but you gave it to Hayward. But, and then now they're stretching to 2, which means they have dead money on their books for the next 3 years until that contract is gone. A little head scratching, but at least in Atlanta's case, you could tell this is a playoff. I could, all their moves say we're making the playoffs. My only concern is Rondo, I feel, is a good mentor to them, and I think he's great, but I think they're going to depend on him more than the Lakers needed to in the regular season. And we all know that regular season Rondo just isn't the same guy. And, you know, maybe that's why they covered themselves up with Chris Dunn, because I really liked him. I really think that Boylan, whatever your boy's name was.
On Chicago, yeah. I don't think anybody.
I don't think he used him right, and I think he'll be a good fit. And I think surrounding Trey with dogs and with guys that can play on the perimeter and can pass will only help him. But he needs to, and like hopefully Rondo can turn him into a decent defender, because people used to compare him to Steph, and my counter was always like, no, Steph tries on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Trey would literally die on screen. If somebody could score like Trey Young not getting a top 50 U.S. team invite was, I think, a message to him, like, you got to play defense. Else we're not going to take you.
Especially for Pop. Yeah, Pop's definitely going to call you on that, man.
Yeah, So those, to me, but like I said, I think we did a great job kind of breaking that down. To me, it's Atlanta. To me, it's L.A. because they're champs. Champs get better. Portland and then Atlanta. I think those three teams and Philly, I think did a lot to build up their roster. I think there's some head scratching in some places like Boston and stuff like that. But those three for sure.
Yeah, and an honorable mention for Phoenix Suns. I thought they did a good job. That's another team. Jay Crowder in 3 years, $30 million, cheap price. Dario Saric as well, 3 years, 27. So you got some guys who can defend. Saric is about a league average shooter. Crowder at stretches has been a knockdown guy. Some people think he's not as elite as maybe some numbers and some stretches indicate. But to me, I think they got better at that position. And of course, I think that they're definitely going to be destined to win going forward. I know in the grand scheme of things, in terms of the 2021 season, I thought the Raptors obviously took a step back in terms of their front court. But I think the re-signing of Fred was great, and they had two great draft picks as well. But getting that 8% decrease going into next summer, or looking at Giannis or a big fish in the
and it looked like they were going to kill their cap flexibility going into next year, which has way more free agents. Like, if you look at the draft class, the fact that Gordon Hayward was able to get $30 million a year kind of shows you how weak the class was for free agents. On the wing, there wasn't a big fish out there.
Yeah, it wasn't big fish at all. Outside of AD, who is rumored to sign a five-year deal.
Especially after the title, that was never going to be a thing. So like, it was literally Hayward and nothing else out there, and it kind of shows you where. And we can talk about Boston. Toronto, I feel like didn't kept their cap flexibility. Miami did the same thing, because even the BAM extension seems a little team friendly. It's a max, but it feels like it's a little, and if you guys want to, we all talk conspiracies, Google who Bam's agent is. Pat Riley gets into a room
and gets some rings on the table,
and maybe he looks at Giannis and says, they signaled to them by signing Bam, I think signals to the league, like, we'll take care of our guys. Because I think that's the problem that Boston's having right now. Who would really want to go there, right? Because remember, speaking of AD, his dad straight up said, and his dad doesn't really talk much. His dad's like, my son's not going there. I saw they did IT, right? And this is what I mean by preserving your relationships. They see the guy playing on a bad hip for the city, his sister's dies, and then they trade him for the first thing to Kyrie. Now, mind you, it's Kyrie Irving. It's the reason why they made the trade. I'm not blaming them for that, but when you have an aggressive GM like Danny and agents are getting around, like, okay, you're going to get moved, and teams don't want to commit to that long. Players don't want to commit to that long term. Thing. And then the fact that they've had to watch both Hayward and Kyrie leave, Horford leaving, I don't think that was a big deal because I wouldn't have signed him to that kind of money. I think Philly definitely signing was really tough. Sense. Yeah.
So obviously, before I go on, you're down on the Charlotte offseason outside of LaMelo Ball, which
I actually do like LaMelo better than most. I feel like I feel a lot of it has to do with his dad, and that's how we view him.
Yeah.
His dad is, but I think he might be better than people want to give him credit for. I think that you got these sports dads who overrate him because they're like, yeah, I want to, you know, this is, you know, like we can get into that all we want to, but they might see him as like, this is how you're supposed to do it. But at the same time, it just felt like you ruined your flexibility to chase the ninth seed. Like, do we have them in the playoffs right now? Maybe.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't love what they're doing. Yeah. That game of basketball, I don't know. But
yeah, that's true. You know, Jordan's had, outside of Kemba, hasn't really had a great track record in terms of draft picks, you know. And yeah, I'm not going to talk about the GOAT debate, but, you know, in terms of GMs, he definitely ain't in it.
LeBron's roster construction from the shadows has been way better than Mike in the light. So that's
true. I definitely take the GM over the Black Cat. But obviously, speaking of LA, I did like the Serge Ibaka deal. I thought they got him at a pretty friendly price. But to me, I thought they lost the offseason in terms of. I still don't understand what they're doing.
This is what I'm thinking. So they signed him for 2 years, $19 million, which I think I think he's a better fit alongside a guy like Zubac or as the small ball five or the backup five that they didn't have with Trez. I think he's not a better player than Trez is, but I think he might be a better fit for what Kawhi and PG need. Kind of a pick and pop guy. Guy can do the handoff a little bit more. A better shooter. I think they needed some more spacing because they didn't shoot really enough threes, I thought, last year. They can't be done.
Mm.
There's no way they can look at their roster and be like, okay, we got Serge and re-sign, you know, Marcus Morris.
They signed him to a lot of money too.
Yeah, like I don't feel like you look at that roster and go like, okay, we're good. Like, unless they really think that switching coaches, right? Because it's the one thing about Lou, similar to Vogel, but I think Lou's actually better at this than Vogel, is Lou would constantly change lineups, defenses, all the time, right? The Cavs would literally change defenses from game to game, series to series.
But yeah, like, you know, before we were rudely interrupted, but the Clippers, to me, I agree with you. I just think that their moves, there's no way that they can finish or they're finished. You know, you saw the little blurb today in terms of the Lou Williams being a possible trade piece. But with him, how much are you going to retain with a guy? Yeah, he's a sixth man of the year candidate, but we did see him as a liability once the playoffs came.
Who really needs what he does right now badly enough to give you something they could use? Unless you're using it for a chip to get something else, like maybe Philly. But then what do you want back from Philly, right? You're not getting Ben from them or anything like that. Yeah. So I think there's no way they look at their roster. Like I said, so we talked about earlier with Lou. I think they're, unless they're really thinking Lou, you know, figured some things out, because I will say this, a lot of the lineups that Doc played where he committed to playing Zubac and Trez and having Lou or Bev or Jackson, one of those three, I don't feel like Lou would ever play those kind of combinations. Because in LA, like in the finals, you saw like Love got concussed, but Love also stopped starting and they started RJ. Like he's going to take risks. He's going to do things strategically. He will play out of the elbow series. He will make PG a better player. Like, I think that's maybe what they're thinking to upgrade, but I still don't think they still need a playmaker. They don't have a guy who gets guys shots. Mm-hmm. And you don't, you know, you can't do that, right? And, you know, it's similar to what the the Bucks kind of have in their situation. It's the reason why they signed a Jrue Holiday, right? You need a guy who can get people into spots. It's the reason why they try to get Bogey, right? Mm-hmm. Which is crazy because last week we broke down how good the trade was, mm-hmm. and but then it fell through. So like, yeah. So So I think the Clippers got a lot of work to do. There's no way they can be done. If this is it, I don't see the path to a championship this way. And with Kawhi being able to opt out at any time, like I think Kawhi can opt out after this season, can't he?
Yeah, him, Paul George, LeBron. You know, this could be a pretty loaded free agency class. So. Class,
right? Like it just feels kind of short sighted that you would kind of do this. So I feel like they're going to be trade deadline guys for sure. They might start the season with what they have and see where it goes, and then come February, March, they're gonna be like, all right, let's pull the trigger on something. But clearly, it's not good enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. Speaking of the Bucks, did you think that the Bogey trade falling through, obviously it was a great acquisition for Atlanta, based on the comparisons to a Joe Harris, kind of gives you that 3-and-D aspect, team defender. I wouldn't say a lockdown defender.
And you can run some pick and roll.
Yeah, you can definitely run some stuff for your team, but do you think that trade falling through kind of puts more pressure on Milwaukee in terms of what obviously is the future in terms of what's going to happen with Giannis?
I mean, they're already under pressure, right? The pressure is clearly that he can walk, right? And every day he doesn't sign that Supermax or that Max is a day that you got to worry if you run the Bucks, right? Like every day that the ink isn't signed, you're in trouble, right? But I think they can say that they got Jrue Holiday. Either way, they're a better team than they were last year. Even with just having Jrue is enough. I think them losing Wes, though, without having Bogey might be a bigger problem. Just because I think you need that other wing. And if that package can land a Bogey, maybe they think again. Maybe their trade deadline move away where they're like, okay, we'll make another play for another guard, and hope to get somebody in and because there's no way they're not going to be aggressive, right? If Philly gets better with the signings they made with Dwight and Green and some of the shooting they built around and Boston, I don't love what Boston's doing, but I feel like they're solid. I think they'll be where they are because they didn't really take they didn't take a step forward, they didn't take giant steps back. I think losing Hayward mattered more when they played a team like Miami because the zone really threw them off. So they will have to address that. I think everyone got a little bit worse, but at least the Bucks got a little bit better. So I don't think they're done. But like I said, it's pressure. It's Giannis, man. Like, you know how this thing goes. The last three times you had a megastar, the last four times you had a megastar in this situation, AD, LeBron, KD, they've all been in different places by the time we've had this conversation a year from now, right? So hopefully Giannis feels a little bit different. Hopefully bucks the trend, no pun intended, for them. But, like I said, Pat Riley gets into a room. That's all I'm saying. That looks like if Pat gets into a room with no COVID, no mask, mm-hmm. might be a problem, man.
Yeah, that's true. Pat's got that mafia type swag to him in terms of the stories you hear. Chris Bosh even said, I was a kid, went into the meeting and he felt like, obviously with his dad and the influence Pat Riley had with the Lakers and the Knicks, obviously it's a different aspect for Giannis, but him seeing what a culture is like, it's a new environment. You never know what could get into somebody's ear and what ideas that can create. But before we wrap things up, man, trade rumors. Do you think we'll have any big splashes before the season starts or before the trade deadline as the season is about to begin in about a month?
Well, I mean, we were going to kind of touch upon it, but I mean, we could always talk about it when we get to our division previews and stuff like that. But I do like that Houston is holding Pat. So, like, they seem to be holding. But that could always be a thing. I think them getting Christian Wood, I think, is a good pickup for them. I think that really works well with Harden and Westbrook. But you know, that always, there's always something, right? It's the NBA. There's going to be some transaction. I don't feel like the Rockets will be done. I don't feel like the Clippers are going to be done. The Bucks won't be done at all. I feel like Miami, Toronto, the Lakers are pretty set with what their rosters are going to be. But there are some teams that will make some moves. I don't know which one, to be honest, just because this thing has just been crazy. Like, how many moves were made, man? We didn't even get to talk about Jerry and Grant leaving Denver. Like, it's been, that all happened in a week, man. We missed so much. So, but it's been a great offseason. The 2 weeks. I don't want to ever have the draft and offseason happen at the same time again because I can't keep up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a lot to handle, man.
Bro, like.
Even to your point with the Jerry and Grant thing, one of the rumors is, I don't know if this actually is going to happen, but one of the rumors was, you know, a sign and trade for Blake. But even then.
Well, I think it would have happened by now.
Yeah, exactly.
And then listening to, you know, reading the tea leaves, looked like he turned down the money that Denver gave him, that money, and he just wanted a bigger role. I don't understand why. I thought Denver lowballed him, but then finding out that they gave him the exact same dollars, I don't know why you would do that, but to each their own. That's a blow for Denver for sure. But losing Torrey Craig, not really, but I do think Jerry and Grant. That's a step back for Denver for sure.
Yeah, we're definitely going to see what MPJ is made of and what type of defensive impact he can have. You know, we saw at times, as we've talked about many times, how he got played off the floor. You know, whether it was at times the Clipper series, and obviously with LeBron kind of saying, okay, every time you're going to switch on the screen, I'm going to attack and get us either a layup or a three. So.
And it was awful. It was some of the worst. And it wasn't even just LeBron. It was just like anybody. It was just like we're going out of Rondo. His hips like are bad. Like he just doesn't turn and move. Like any young people who are listening to this, I don't know why, but if you are for tips, you should watch the breakdown. His hips are horrible laterally. He's got a lot to do. So it was good, man.
Yeah, appreciate you taking time out of your evening. You know, we had a couple special guests give their 2 cents on the off season, but yeah, hope you guys
Daddy, man.
Yeah, exactly. Hope you guys are staying safe out there. Peace, people.
For more content, you can follow us on Instagram at danielsden.blog and also on Facebook at danielsden. If you want to hear more podcasts, we're available on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple, etc., etc.